What do you want to play, Sam?
We're going to play Take Me Out to the Ball Game. We're all going to sing it, too.
Another edition of Meet Me at Mutual. I'm your host, Daniel Shopdell. You'll find me at C70 and riding at C70 at the bat over at the Cardinal Conclave with me this week. And as normal these days is Alan Medlock from the Redbird Daily. You'll find him on Twitter at amedlock1. Alan, we've got... I don't know that we've got a whole lot of good stuff to talk about, but that's never stopped us before. It's been an interesting few days, I guess, for the Cardinals. We'll get into it a little bit, but you know, just overall, this has not really been pleasant to start this season, has it?
No, not at all. And I was really hoping for kind of an uplifting game tonight, build off that Scherzer win and the leak. Stopping the losing streak. I thought they would probably play well tonight. I thought Waka looked decent tonight. Like you pointed out earlier, though, it kind of stinks losing you're given a 2-run lead and you lose it before you're even allowed to get an out. I thought he looked good. I think I think he's progressing well. Yeah, like I said, the caveat being we don't know how long that's going to last, but it is good to build on a couple of good starts from Leak and Waka, but still just not hitting on all cylinders and, I'm slowly, little by little, losing faith in the opinion I had that they were a decent team. You know, and that's what's kind of making it hard night to night to watch.
Yeah, it is. It is. But let's get into looking at the past week in the Redbird Rewind. All right, since we did the show last week, the Cardinals won a game the next night against the Reds, won 10-4. And then lost a lot of games. Shut out by the Reds on Sunday. Lost what had been a close game turned into a very ugly game to start the Nationals, 14-6. Lost the second game to the Nationals. Finally, as you said, beat Max Scherzer because that's the way baseball works. when you keep getting beat by everybody, you go out and beat a guy that could win the Cy Young. And then, again, had the off day yesterday, and then a tough one tonight, a game, and we'll get into that a little bit, but a game that actually felt, I think, more like a loss, more than just a complete failure. And I think that's what we get into with some of these games. Let's talk a little bit about what this week has looked like. Like I say, you go back all the way to the Reds game, after that 10-4 game where Alamedes Diaz hit two homers, and even that game, I mean, they walked. I think they walked 12 times and got 10 hits or something like that. I mean, they walked more than they hit. This offense just continues to really sputter. I say that, and then I look, and three times this week, you know, did they have the cheap drinks at On the Run. But it still just doesn't feel like everything's falling into place.
No, it's they're lacking that big hit. We had two situations with Fowler tonight on his ball to the wall, and they're late. I mean, that's 0-2 pitch on off Chapman tonight. I mean, you're fighting for your life on one of those situations. I understand he's as good as it gets, and those are just a couple of situations that you lost. I thought Wong had a good opportunity to drive in a run tonight and just didn't get it deep enough. And those are just missed opportunities. And if you're not going to play crisp defense and if you're still figuring out your way with the glove and cutting down on your mental mistakes, you've got to capitalize on those opportunities. Going back to last weekend, with the one I had a major disappointment is I thought after the 10-4 win against Cincinnati, I thought a win on Sunday with Martinez was signed, sealed, and delivered. Mm-hmm. And I was, I unfortunately couldn't watch the game. I was at the ballpark all day Sunday. But when I checked the scores, I was like, man, what is going on? And then I kind of followed up with what it was. He was, you know, strong through four and couldn't get anything going to score any runs. And then it just all kind of fell apart after the Peralta, you know, a couple of errors on the botched double play. And, you know, that's one of those where you really wish the offense could bail him out. As your ace, that's kind of what you would hope would happen, and it just didn't happen. And they're just not hitting on all cylinders. It's frustrating, and they just can't get that one big hit that I keep thinking. I was thinking Piscotty's yesterday was the hit to kind of catapult them, and I was wrong.
Yeah, and again, like you said, we'll go through the team a little bit more in our main segment because we'll kind of really kind of break down what we're seeing. But, you know, the ball that Dexter Fowler hit tonight that almost went out, I think that's the best thing I've seen him hit in a long time. And I know it's going to take a little – I mean, I'm not down on Dexter Fowler or anything.
This idea
that we had a good offense, that the Cardinals had a good offense was – predicated on the fact that Dexter Fowler was going to get on base, and that then Diaz and Carpenter were going to be getting on base, and they haven't been able to do that on a regular basis. I mean, that's, we've seen in the past what happens when the leadoff guy's not going well. I mean, there are times when Carpenter is in a slump and nobody gets on, and when the leadoff guy doesn't get on, it really kind of short circuits things a lot of times. So, you know, you see that, but then, you know, it's just like every facet of the game failed the Cardinals this week. I mean, we saw in the Reds game, which you talked about a little bit, the defense struggled, and then we saw that again tonight, a few defensive errors. I think even that Nationals game as well, as it helped to get out of hand with some unearned runs. The offense is just not getting that big hit at times. And the bullpen has been extremely shaky to the point that, you know, we're looking at that win against the Nationals, but if Johnny Peralta's playing third base instead of Jed Jerko in the eighth inning, that game probably gets tied, and who knows?
Oh, we're cussing Cecil. I completely agree with you on that. That was hard contact. Harper's a hard out, and that if it was anybody else, that maybe Garcia, you know, Garcia and Jerko, we're pretty confident they make that play. Unless Peralta's standing right there, he probably doesn't. So I agree with you wholeheartedly. I thought about that. I even wrote that in my post yesterday that, you know, it was a good win for Cecil, and not necessarily a win on paper, but it was a in that battle between Cecil and Harper was a good win, but he did it by the skin of his teeth on that, and kind of got lucky that it was hit right at somebody.
Yeah, because like I said, we're just that being an inch or two on the other side or somebody different being there from that game probably being tied, and there's no, I mean, yes, Stephen Piscotty went and hit a 3-run home run in the next inning, but you don't know if that still happens in a tie game. You know, maybe the pitching choices are different. You know, you could be very, very close here to a 5-game losing streak and still only winning 2 games in a row. They're 3-7 now. I noticed, you know, it's not the worst in baseball because I saw the Blue Jays fell to 1-9 tonight, which somebody indicated that no playoff team has ever gone 1-9 to start the season. I don't know how many have gone 3-7 to start the season. I don't know. I mean, occasionally, I guess. It's just, again, it's very frustrating to see this at a time. And again, now they played the Cubs, who are very, very good. They played the Reds, who are still in first place, and I don't think any of us actually expect that to happen. But they're not. It's not like the Reds are, you know, only have 2 wins, and those 2 wins are against the Cardinals. They're playing pretty well right now. Played the Nationals, who again should be a good team, and now you're playing the Yankees, who are a solid team as well. So it's not unheard of that you're going 3-7. It's still not good. It's still not a justification. But I think it's better that you're doing it then than against people like, you know, San Diego and I'd say the Brewers, but the Brewers are over 500 too. So maybe, I don't know. I just think that even this week, the starting pitching, fell apart. So there really wasn't anything that you could go when you sat down for that game, you knew was going to be successful. I just don't think that there's anything right now that you can do that with.
No, I agree, and that's and I the pitching matchup right now with what the Cardinals have right now is not a good matchup with the Nationals. That lineup's loaded. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Eaton sets the table, and they seem to be hitting on all cylinders already. And which may not be, which could be a great thing for them, or it could be one of those things to where you may, I'm not going to say peak in April, but, you know, it's one of those where they made no mistakes in the first two games of that series offensively, and it was crazy. And, you know, the Cubs are the Cubs. That lineup's good. That lineup's very good. And the Reds bullpen hardly gets scored upon. So that you're right. I mean, basically the three matchups so far have been tough. On a Friday night in New York, you never know what you're going to get. I was to walk away with 4-3 and have two chances to score late. I felt pretty good about tonight's game. I was still angry about the loss just because I felt like the one run to take the lead ultimately was the throw in from you know, Wong on the outfield, where it was given, the error was given to Wong, kind of a lackadaisical play, maybe a little lackadaisical by Molina on the play, but Ellsbury took advantage of it and scored, and it is what it is. But you're right. A buddy of mine texted me. He said, "Well, what happens?" And it was after the game one of the Washington series. I said, "Well, I would prepare for a tough road trip and get back to St. Louis for the Monday night game and just regroup, and hopefully that they can kind of start playing better." There's three or four teams that I consider good in baseball besides the Cardinals that have gotten off to bad starts. So a 3-7 run in June isn't as magnified as it is now. So there's still some hope. I think that as Cardinals fans, some of our issues are the issues they're having right now are the issues they had last year. And in all honesty, it was kind of the issues that they had to end the season in 15. And that's what I think is troublesome to a lot of fans.
Yeah, I mean, there are some people that are saying, hey, it's only 10 games. Hey, it's only a couple of weeks in. And that's fair, but it is. It's that idea that it's not just 2 weeks, it's a year in 2 weeks. It's you know, maybe a year, a couple of months in 2 weeks. It is a lot of the same things that we saw last year, and it's more frustrating when you sit down over the off season and say, you know, defense and base running are going to be your issues, and we're going to fix these things. So to continue to lose games, and the defense, I don't think is as bad. It's definitely not as bad as it was the first 2 weeks of the season last year when Diaz seemed to throw away everything that was hit to him.
Yeah.
But it's still, there are still moments. You know, the Cubs game, I guess it must have been the second game, where those runs scored because Randall Grichuk threw to the wrong base or threw home when he shouldn't have thrown home. Even stuff that's not showing up in the box scores as errors, there's still plays that should have been made. Well, even in game one, the play with Matt Carpenter.
Exactly what I was thinking about. I always say that. Plays not made. Plays not made. That hurts them worse than maybe a booted ball. You know, just the play not made. It seems like the other team capitalizes on that quite a bit.
Yeah. So I think that's a lot of the frustration, too. I mean, if the Cardinals were playing good defense and the bullpen was just, you know, struggling, maybe that's a different story. I mean, you still get some probably frustration about how Mike Matheny would use them, no matter how he used them. But, you know, at least you only say, okay, well, once we fix the bullpen, everything's fine. But it's not that, and it's stuff that we thought should have been fixed and doesn't seem to have been fixed, or does not seem to be a priority anymore. And I guess that leads us, and I'll go ahead and talk about it here rather than the main section, but that does lead us into a topic that we've talked about before. We talked about it probably talked about it a little bit last week, but it's been more pronounced this week, and that is Matt Adams in the outfield. Adams started Saturday and Sunday, and I think he started Wednesday, I can't remember if there was another game in there that he may have started as well, but there's at least three times this week that he started in the outfield. Again, Mike Matheny's argument is that they need his bat in the lineup, that they need to get him some playing time, etc., etc. We've heard this all year long, and it feels like it's starting to wear... That argument had some merit to start the season, but that merit seems to be dropping rapidly when you factor in not only how Matt Adams is hitting, but the fact that you have to sit Randall Grichuk to let him do
mm-hmm.
it.
Sure. That was my post today was just kind of a recap of the Washington series and just kind of a header into the New York series. And that I finished with that point. I don't think it makes zero sense. And it really – it's wearing thin, I think you hit the nail on the head with it because you are – you're removing a good defender in Grichuk and an all-around great athlete in Grichuk. And more to the point, Grichuk's a better hitter than Adams. I don't understand the benefit of having him out there at all. And it's amazing to me, and this is going to get into some of the Twitter questions, into something else. If you need him in the lineup so bad, you're going to have to put your foot down, and you're going to have to figure out this third base situation. Because if you have to have – if you feel that Adams needs to be in the lineup, we have a solution in that dugout. And I could get really deep in a theory that I have about this, and we can wait till later for another segment, but – I had a feeling that if Adams did anything right, it was going to cause problems. And the fact that they, in December, gave the first baseman's mitt to Carpenter and had said, we're not going to move him around, it makes me wonder if this isn't more of a Carpenter digging his heels in. I don't know. I mean, it just makes zero sense. You get worse in two different positions, and the smoke that they're trying to blow in our direction is that Adams is the superior hitter, and it's just not true.
Yeah, I mean, I like Matt Adams. I think Matt Adams is a better hitter than some people give him credit for. You know, that said, and it's kind of like Colton Wong right now, too, it's very difficult to defend that position because they're not getting the results that we needed to see.
Yeah, and not to cut you off, but yeah. I'm going to back one of your points up. I think there have been plays this year that throws to first and plays at first that Matt Adams makes that Matt Carpenter denied. And that's another thing that kind of bothers me about the narrative we've been told about defense, to where I think they have been lacking in a spot where you feel like you've got to get Adams back in the lineup where he could play first better defensively, and I still think you're going to get better defensive output than you've gotten out of Peralta at third base moving Carpenter back.
Yeah, I think that your overall defense with Grichuk and Carpenter at third and Adams at first is significantly better than what we're seeing now. You know, and that said, I mean, I don't know. I mean, we haven't seen Matt Adams at first base this year that I can think of.
I don't think he's put the glove on it at all during the season. And then the one start, which I thought he was going to get, went to Martinez, who I thought if anybody got a crack at one of the outfield spots right now would be Martinez, and he made the start at first. I understand it was with Gonzalez, but it was the Scherzer game, correct?
No.
Now everything's running together.
No,
now you got
it
me
was
fired
the,
up. I can't think straight.
Yeah, I think it was the Gonzalez game because I think it was the lefty on the mound, and yeah, because that was the idea that Scherzer didn't do quite as well against lefties, and so Adams and all of them were in the lineup against him. It was Gonzalez. They went an all righty lineup when that put Martinez at first.
Okay.
I mean, again, we haven't seen him there. I know in the past he's been very good at defensively at first. I really thought he was underrated. He has made some very, very great instinctive moves. Now, I don't know how he looks, now that he's thinner. I don't know how that works for him. But I don't know. It really seems like, again, if you wanted to have Matt Adams go out there in, the seventh inning of a blowout game or the getaway day lineup, once every month, that's one thing. But for him to have about as many starts as Piscotty or Grichuk right now in the outfield is just crazy. It just doesn't make any sense at all. And again, if Randall Grichuk wasn't on this team, if you were playing somebody that was defense first, if you had a Pete Cosma type that was your main outfielder, then yeah, I get that. I get that you want to try Matt Adams' bat over a guy that can't hit his way up a paper bag. But you've got a guy, like you said, Grichuk's a better hitter right now, and definitely better defensively. So why are you not playing him? And I know that some of the starts that Adams has gotten has been Piscotty and dealing with his, you know, concussion and thing and knee and stuff like that. But you know, again, Jose Martinez did well in spring training. Why are you not at least letting him out there, even somewhat? A guy that hit, like, you know, 400 in the spring, and for, you know, for the fact that spring training results actually matter a little bit, I guess, to this squad, it seems very strange that he's not getting a start or two more. He's gotten, what, one start and then about three other at bats.
And it's and I felt like I was proud of the way that Adams hit his way onto the team, and I was very proud of the way that Martinez hit his way on the team. I mean, and we, you and I had both had spoken about maybe being a little bit skeptical about Martinez, and he played his way onto the team. He hit his way onto the opening day roster, and he's an outfielder, and we've yet to see him out there. It's, I don't know, it's baffling. I just don't get it. In, yeah, frustrations may be boiling over right now just due to the poor play. But yeah, if you're gonna put Adam in the lineup, we want to see a double every now and then, and we want to see hard contact, and we've seen that. But the productivities in the pluses that Grichuk brings are so much better than what Adams brings that it's just hard to justify him playing that much in the outfield.
Yeah, I mean, again, I think Matt Adams has taken some pretty good at bats this year, but
yeah,
they haven't necessarily turned it into. They've been more of the fact that he's battled, and, you know, he might strike out on 10 pitches, he might draw a walk, but there's not been a whole lot of power.
And a tough luck situation to where, you know, that ball, any other part of the ballpark tonight goes out. You know, he hits it a long way, straight up to the deepest part, and, you know, it ends up in the bottom of a glove. So, yeah, there's tough luck, and just like you and I were when we were texting back and forth today, I like the fact that he can DH in these ballparks because I like having that bat and not the glove in a position. But you know, back to the point, that fits so much better than the experiment and wherever. What I don't know the end game to what they're doing on this. That's where I get a little nervous.
You know, the fact that the Cardinals are in New York this weekend, and that means you get to see Matt Holliday in a strange uniform and everybody, and honestly, like I said on Twitter, I think Yadier Molina had been planning for how to pitch to Matt Holliday for quite some time, as he strikes out three times tonight and gets just one fly ball out, and I wouldn't be surprised if Holliday has a troublesome weekend. But you know, that gets people talking about, well, should the Cardinals have kept Matt Holliday, especially since they're obviously, you know, you're playing Matt Adams in the outfield. They should have done that with Matt Holliday. And I get what people are saying, but, you know, it doesn't quite track, because if Matt Holliday was here, Matt Holliday would have to play pretty much every day. And even though we've seen a lot of Adams, he's not going to be playing. He's not playing every day, and he's not going to play every day. But Matt Holliday would be getting, you know, $15 million and be a veteran and be expecting to play every day. So I think, as much as I'd love to have Matt Holliday around here, if you're looking at a pretty typical lineup of Fowler, Grichuk, and Piscotty, there's really not a spot for him.
No, and if Holliday was still on the team, and I understand the business and giving money to someone 35 plus, you know, I'm against it as well. I know that there's those heritage contracts, as I like to do it, to where you pay for what they've done in the past. And the Cardinals are very good about moving away from that. You know, I was proud they did it with Molina. I think that there's more to the Molina contract too. I think they plan on him playing for more than a couple of years, and I don't think they ever plan on getting him out of that uniform. And I think there's added incentive to Molina deal, which I don't want to get too sidetracked on this. If Holliday comes back, he's going to play a little bit of first. He's probably going to play a little bit of left field. But you know he's going to be hitting third. So you're wondering, if he comes back, does Fowler ever exist? Does, you know, I think that Diaz is probably the odd man out if Fowler comes on board. And you just wonder if that makeup of the team is any more optimal than what they have now.
Yeah, it just it just doesn't work. I mean, I get that. And Matt Holliday, obviously, he's done well this year. The bats are there. The still the hitting is strong. He can help a New York team. I just don't.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
Yeah.
What I didn't realize is I saw the Jim Hayes interview on the pregame, and Holliday's great on that. Holliday didn't play any defensive position in spring at all. He DH'd the whole time.
Yeah.
And I was like, wow, that's pretty telling. And that's I'm glad, as being a Holliday fan, I'm glad he's in New York to be able to take in that tradition, to be able to hit in the middle of the lineup as a DH and prolong your career. And that's kind of what we assumed last year when we even thought that he may be on the trade market before he got hurt, that he could probably do well in an American League city, which, you know, I kind of say the same thing about Adams.
Yeah, and that's – yeah, we'll get to a little bit about that maybe when we get into the Twitter questions, because there are some that kind of tie into that. But
yeah, I want to answer a bunch of those questions right now, but I'm like, well, I'm going to wait.
Yeah, we'll wait on those. But let's go ahead and transition then here into our one big thing.
Alisea, the second for one, the double play. What a double play by Ozzie Smith.
And that, I mean, it's kind of going to flow into the other part of the conversation, but we will talk a little bit about what this team looks like after 2 weeks and what's working and what's not. If you had to say one thing that is working, well, maybe a couple things. What are your initial thoughts on what is actually being a positive for the Cardinals right now?
Well, outside of a couple of speed bumps this week, I'm still pretty bullish on the starting pitching. I think that Lynn ran into just a hot lineup. I mean, Harper and Murphy. I mean, Murphy had a huge night tonight. I mean, people are having a hard time getting him out, and I just think Lynn ran into some tough luck. Martinez was such a big setback, but. But, you know, there's going to be times where his command is going to be off. And I can give him a pass on that. I fully expect for him to pitch well tomorrow. Leak, what can you say about that start? I mean, that was tough, and that's two really good starts. Waka, I was proud of him. I thought he looked good tonight. I mean, you take away those – that walk's huge and then the bomb's huge, and like we had already talked about. But he was regularly 97, 98 tonight. And spotting it. And if that's the case, that changeup becomes pretty deadly, because I saw some guys take some pretty terrible swings. So I'm pretty upbeat on that. I know that goes back to you and I off the radar having some text conversations about this. Wainwright's given up a lot of hard contact. Now, that kind of goes back to the two lineups he faced are good. So I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt. I want him to reinvent himself to be that pitcher I think he's going to be. I just don't think there's, you know, just like you said, even in our season preview, their margin for error is low. So this needs to happen really, really quick. With that being said, I put grades on four. I went pitch, starting pitching, relief, defense, and offense. I just kind of put some grades down to where I thought they were. They got a B-, probably would have get a B. I wrote these down before the game today. And I put the starting pitching down as a B-. I think that it's pretty good. I think it's going to stay there. There's a little bit of hesitancy in me saying that, but then I look back and I'm like, the lineup's that has beat those starters are pretty good, and they're lengthy. So I think right now starting pitching is something to build around, because I want to believe they're going to hit. And it shows that, yes, they have scored, you know, 5-plus runs several times already. I'm hoping that levels out and they become what I think they're going to become out of that lineup.
Yeah, I mean, I might even go a little higher on the rotation, because, I mean, it is hard to tell because they've only had two starts each, and we'll know a little bit more probably next week after they've had another one under their belt. Mike Leake has just been amazing all the way around, you know, and it's pretty funny because, you know, we thought, okay, he's going to be better with a better defense, but the defense hasn't gotten better behind him, or at least not significantly, and yet he's still been able to dominate. Now, he had a couple of stretches like this last year, too, so it may just be a couple of good starts, but it's still good to see, especially with the struggles that they had the rest of the week. I think they'll hit, but you know, maybe not. I mean, again, you get into the lineups and everything doesn't seem to click very well. It does seem to be, you know, the Cubs had the saying last year, as Dexter goes, they go, and that may still be the case here, too. I mean, if Dexter starts getting on base and Diaz can start, you know, moving into second or third and, you know, Carpenter can start driving them in, then you get those early leads that hopefully you don't turn around and give right back. And hopefully that gets everybody else going. But there's a lot of questions about this lineup. I think there's a lot of black holes right now. I mean, you start Adams, and he's struggling. You know, Colton Wong is not necessarily hitting that well. You know, you've got Johnny Peralta, which is a whole other story. I mean, and sometimes, like tonight, all three of those guys are in the lineup. And if you're going to have, you know, really questionable spots, three questionable spots, it becomes very difficult for an offense to really get on track.
Yeah, I was disappointed Peralta was in the lineup tonight. I thought that this would have been a perfect situation to give him the plus one day off that, you know, that the Cardinals have known to do. Give him the full day off, let him set tonight. In the American League, you know you're probably not going to pitch hit much. But I thought Jericho played well in Washington. Mm-hmm. And I just wonder what he's going to have to do to earn regular starts in that situation, because I think he's going to take at bats away from Wong more than he has Peralta. And I think that if you did a consensus of all Cardinals fans, a lot of people are going to say the Peralta is the weak link right now. And I just, you know, Jericho crushed that bomb. You know, he had what, four or five hits in the Washington series. I really thought he was going to play tonight. I'm curious. It's Sabathia tomorrow, so I would almost expect him to play, but that'll, like I said, it'll probably be at the expense of Wong. So yeah, I don't know. And you're right. But another thing that you touched on was the leadoff factor last year for Fowler. And when Fowler was hitting, their offense was going. If you remember, this is the same thing that was happening to the St. Louis lineup 3 or 4 years ago, when out of nowhere they gave the idea of leading off Carpenter, and then that's when they took off. And so that just shows how important that leadoff spot is. I'm wondering, I don't think Matheny's going to do it quickly, but I'm wondering if there may be anything in the thought process right now to go Fowler, Carpenter, Diaz here for a little while. Yeah. And maybe see if that could kickstart something. And I would not necessarily be against that, just because I think Diaz is starting to show that his extra base ability is high, and it wasn't just a flash in the pan.
Well, that's the lineup that I was advocating in the offseason, and I'm pretty sure I've seen others. I think I saw the people at Viva Alberto's do the same. It felt like that was the best thing, because, like you said, you put those two guys that are used to working the count up there, and then you let Diaz, you know, with his extra base power, drive him in. Not that Matt Carpenter doesn't have that kind of power, but...
No, I agree.
But
I agree.
It just feels like he does better. And again, it's small sample sizes, and obviously he can hit in the third spot. I know Zach Gifford, I think it was Zach, that this week was talking about how Carpenter had a pretty good number of balls hit with high exit velocity, and at the right, I mean, it just... You know, balls that should have dropped and that weren't.
Well, you're right. In the first week of the season, his hard balls hit rate was low. Mm-hmm. And that made me worry. Just like you and I talked tonight, I was like, is it me or is he popping a lot of balls up? And then he hit one that would have been out of any stadium. So I keep thinking that he's going to get on track. And it would not bother me at all if it was in that two spot. My biggest concern about that before the season started was I was just afraid that Diaz was going to be the one that got buried somewhere. Mm-hmm. That, yeah, Carpenter was going to hit second, but Scotty was going to hit third, and Diaz was going to hit yeah. eight. That's what I was concerned about. But I think that at this point right now, you're going to hear a lot of rumblings about Diaz at short. But I think that we have to come to the realization that he's going to be a bat first shortstop, and I can live with that. you know, if he's putting up the numbers, which I think he's going to. So if you want to move him down to three hole, it doesn't seem to bother him. He does not strike out that often. And when he does, he just got beat. Like, Betances struck him out in that big spot tonight. Mm-hmm. Betances is sick.
Yeah.
I mean, he's nasty. That bullpen's really good. So you want a battle right there, but you can kind of say, okay, I get it. But I think he's earned the right. If they were to make that switch, I would feel comfortable with that at this point, where before the season, I probably would not have, because I would have thought that Diaz would have been the first one to, he goes on an 0-for-8 and, you know, he's hitting for the pitcher. And that was my biggest concern.
Right. So we think the offense is going to get better. We like the starting pitching. I guess that really dips us down to the bullpen.
This is the lowest I've ever given somebody. But go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, I mean, you've got Matt Bowman, who still hasn't allowed a run this year. You've got, well, I don't know. I don't know who else you've got. Trevor Rosenthal has looked very good in his first outing, but then gave up, you know, three straight hits in his second outing to get yanked before the more damage could be done. Mm-hmm. So his jury's still out on him. I think I'm not sure that he's back to the Trevor we really like, but he, you know, has some points in his favor. You know, other than that, it just right now there's nobody you really trust to trot out of that pen.
No, it's really bad. And this is going to sound really ridiculous. What's going on right now, I think, could be a good thing. And just like you and I had talked about, and this is going to go over another one of our segments, the stars are aligning right now to make a lot of Cardinals fans happy, because I think Broxton's on really thin ice. Mm-hmm. And I think that whenever some of these guys start moving and you're going to have to start injecting some of this youth, I think he's going to be the first one to go down. Outside of, I want to pat myself on the back on something. The Seagrass deal has really concerned me. Like last week when we had talked about, okay, if there's a jam, what's going to happen? And I made the comment, I wouldn't be surprised if Seagrass has some sort of injury and gets shut down for a little while. Well, after seeing that Bernie was all over that this morning about his drop in velocity, and showed that it was last year as well. And there was a graph showing how his dip in velocities really affected him. And then tonight, he couldn't find the strike zone. And at one point, McCarver and Dan were talking about it. He threw five straight changeups.
Yeah.
And it makes you wonder if there's something where he's afraid to let loose on that fastball. And it just makes me wonder if Lyons keeps pitching how he does, and one more start or one more appearance that looks good, he's going to be knocking on the door and someone's going to have to fill a role for him. They're going to have to figure that out with Seagrass, because I would have 1,000 times more confidence in Tyler Lyons right now than I do in Seagrass.
Yeah, and we'll get to Lyons a little bit in the Twitter questions, but it's going to come to the point, because as far as I know, you know, Tyler Lyons is on a rehab program, and it's only 20 days, so you're talking, you know, this week, maybe beginning of next, and he's got to be up.
Exactly. I think that we're going to see some roster turnover by the time they get back to St. Louis. Yeah. I think there could be a lot of stuff that happens this weekend.
Which is an interesting – I actually looked at the schedule. It's an interesting set of the schedule. They come home for 3 against Pittsburgh, then they go up to Milwaukee for 4, then they come back to St. Louis for a homestand of at least 6. So it's a kind of a weird situation. But, you know, I don't know. You're right. It's interesting to see Chris – you know, Jennifer Langwash tweeted out, and we updated it, you know, right after he walked another guy, but he's walked 6 of the 18 batters he'd faced. Now, he got, like, mm-hmm. these 2 guys out, I think. But, you know, that's a lot of walks. And Seacrest has always been a guy that's had issues, and he especially had issues with home runs, which he's already had given up at least 1 this mm-hmm. year. You very well may be right. I mean, you may be talking about interesting, especially, like you said, not throwing the fastball. Velocity is down, as people noted. He just may not, you know, there may be something they're hiding, or he's hiding more than they are, and that may be the way this works, because otherwise, you know, I don't know. So I think we've got Twitter questions on that one, but I think that's an interesting scenario we may be in. You know, I guess O will probably be okay. He's still kind of you know, he's been a little shaky this year, but, you know, there's really no indication that he won't be somewhat better. I mean, he should be closer to what he was last year. You know, you got your guys like Solokovich, you got Broxton, who, you know, Broxton's Broxton, if he, you know.
Yeah, that's the, like I said, I'm not so sure we're going to even be able to say Broxton's Broxton within the next month.
Yeah.
If, you know, if everything is progressing how we think it's going to, I think that will be the writing probably on the wall on that one.
Yeah. I think the bullpen will be better, but it'll also be a bullpen that looks different. I mean, like you said,
I agree.
Lyons come up. That's just one of those things that's going to rotate, or he's going to bring up different arms. And what's going to be interesting is which arms did he bring up? You know, does he go and get guys like Sandy Alcantara, you know, things like that, fireballers to help out?
I think Memphis has a ton of good arms. Springfield's loaded. I'd be willing to bet that of the four guys they have starting in Springfield right now, we'll see at least three of them at some point this year in St. Louis. Now, and some of them may be in September. I don't know, but I like the fact that some of these young guys can come up that don't know any better, that just come up, throw gas, and get guys out. We rode the wave with Rosenthal, and we rode it with Martinez. And I really think that if you get close and you can make one of those moves to bring up one of those young guys that don't know any better, that can make your club successful.
Well, unless you've got something else you want to discuss here about the team, that does give us a decent transition into the futures report. So, do you have anything? Is there anything?
No, I'm good. I feel like I'm on my soapbox, and we'll keep going from there.
All right, well, we will then transition into our futures report.
0-1 to Pujols. In the air, left field, and Pujols has given St. Louis the lead. A dramatic, towering three-run home run. Stunned in disbelief here in Houston.
Now, earlier today, I had a chance to talk with Kyle Reese, who joined us last week. And obviously, Kyle is, along with John Nagel, the minor league gurus over at the Redbird Daily. And he and I had a chance to talk about what went on in the minors this week. So let's take a listen. And we bring in Kyle Reese from Redbird Daily, as you'll all know, Kyle, from joining us last week. Kyle's going to just kind of run down the week that was in the minor leagues. And Kyle, I'll just turn it over to you. You know, what's the highlights from this last week?
Oh, you know, there's been plenty of highlights. The thing that really sticks with me, first and foremost, highlights aside, is it's been a really busy DL day in the minor league system on Friday. As most people know at this point, Nick Plummer was put on the DL. Luke Weaver was put on the DL earlier in the week. Mag Sierra was put on the DL. Trey Nielsen was recalled from the DL. He's probably going to be a relief pitcher, would be my guess. He might slide into the sixth spot in the rotation for Springfield. But it's been a very, very, very busy day in minor league transactions. Mitch Harris was taken off the DL, and the Cardinals designated released Thomas Lee. So that's the first thing that comes to my mind. The one highlight that I have on a personal note, you try to be as objective with the kids as you can be, but the Luke Weaver DLing allowed Daniel Ponce de Leon an opportunity to pitch in Memphis. He was initially slated to pitch in the Springfield rotation, and Daniel got the pitch earlier in the week, and he pitched really well. In my personal opinion, he should have started in Memphis, but some of the aggressive promotions for a guy like Chris Ellis stopped that from happening. But in his first start in Memphis, the 25-year-old Daniel Ponce de Leon went 5 1/3 innings, struck out 8, let up 2 hits, and allowed 1 run, and was throwing strikes. He looked like the pitcher that we all saw in spring training when he was pitching a little bit for the Cardinals then. And that to me, that's like my personal favorite highlight for the week. But other than that, it's been nonstop, like really, really solid minor league performances throughout the entire organization. Another thing that sticks with me, and it won't appear on what we've been working on yet, but Adolis Garcia, Jose Adolis Garcia, the Cuban gentleman that they signed a couple months back, made a really solid impression in spring training as well. He had a home run last night, his first home run on American soil, I believe. And he threw a runner out. He almost threw a runner out second. He was deep in center field. He caught the ball and almost flat-footed. He put the ball on a line to second and almost got the runner. He's going to be interesting. I saw most of his work in over in the Asian leagues and the Korean league and the Japan league, and he looked terrible. And you know, he was great in Cuba, won an MVP in Cuba, and to go from that to what we saw, and then now what we're seeing, it is a big thing. So I wouldn't be surprised if he continues on that path, that power, that good defense, if he's not getting a bump to Memphis very soon. So those are just a couple things that have stuck with me. What do you think, Daniel? What have you heard? What's sticking with you?
Well, I guess what you touched on it already is the idea that Nick Plummer has gone on the disabled list. You know, being that he missed all of last year with an injury, and I know this is a different one, but do we start to worry about him being, you know, injury prone, or is this going to really hinder his development?
I think at this point you definitely worry about it. He's an interesting kid, and it's a shame that we don't have enough information on him at this point. We don't know what kind of hitter he's going to be. He's a patient kid at the plate, and there's no reason to think that if he wasn't given the reps that he wouldn't be able to develop. But you know, the wrist injury he's had. I think this. I don't remember for sure. I've been playing catch up all week, but I think that Nick his injury this time. Was it a lat or it was
oblique? Yeah,
oblique. That's right. See, that concerns me. We all know how mm-hmm. oblique injuries are. So you know, I don't know. I'm definitely worried. John and I had kind of a differing of opinion on him. And John's right. Many people are selling him off, and I might be one of those people who have already kind of sold him off because of his injury history. It's just, you know, this was supposed to be his third year in the system, and he hardly has any at bats and. He needs to play, and until he plays, you've got to kind of just, you know, bear the fact that he might not ever be the first, you know, worth the first round pick that the Cardinals gave him.
Now he's still young though, right? He came out of high school. Am I remembering right?
Oh yeah, no, you're right. I think he just turned 20.
So there is still time, but you're right. He needs to get some at bats then. I noticed, you know, we'll go ahead and plug. You've got the weekly prospect awards up at Redbird Daily, and you've got hitter and pitcher of the week for both all the different teams that have been playing. Let's talk a little bit about Luke Voit out of Memphis. You know, he's obviously had a very good week, 3 homers. He's an age 26. That feels a little old to me. I mean, is he going to become, well, as you put, a minor league mix of Xavier Scruggs and Matt Adams? That's at least a major league player at some point in time, though, isn't it?
Yeah, I completely agree. Luke's a really, really interesting guy. He's from the area. He's from the St. Louis area, that is. Mm-hmm. And he went to Missouri State, and he had to repeat Palm Beach. That was part of the reason why he's 26 and just playing in Memphis for the first time. But he was drafted as a catcher. He played like one season a catcher, and you know they've kind of moved him around. He is a big boy. When you see him on the field, when I went down to Memphis a couple of weeks back to watch the Cardinals play the Redbirds in the exhibition game, he looks different. He looks like a linebacker out there. He really does. That's not just I'm not playing that up at all. He's a monster of a man. I try to make a point in the weekly prospect awards of saying he's the minor league mix of Xavier Scruggs and Matt Adams, especially because of the what's going on with Matt Adams right now and the Cardinals and Mike Matheny's love for him. I think we all forget just how good Matt Adams was as a minor leaguer. He, you know, consistently hitting above 300 and 20 plus home runs and not striking out. He really flashed being, you know, an everyday first baseman. And like you mentioned, Xavier Scruggs, he had a chance to be a decent bench bat at the major leagues, and I think that Luke Voit is somewhere in between. But I definitely think that if he's hitting as well as he's hitting right now, 7 extra base hits and 22 at bats, if the Cardinals were to look, you know, down in the minor leagues for a spark, personally, that's where I would go. I know that there's been a lot of talk about Paul DeJong I'm always a little bit more leery with a kid who strikes out more, being aggressive to promote him to the majors. There's an exposure issue there that I don't feel comfortable with personally. But I would say that if you needed a spark, especially playing the Yankees with a DH, that might be where I would go. And he has played a little bit of left field, last year. I'm suggesting that he's a better left fielder than Matt Adams is. But I think that if you needed the spark, that's where I would go offensively.
A lot of talk in minor circles before the season was about the Springfield pitching staff. Has it lived up to the hype so far?
It's actually been kind of a mixed bag. So the best pitcher in the minor leagues for the Cardinals 2 weeks in is Jack Flaherty. He's pitched 13 innings, 13.2 innings. He struck out 10. He's not walking anyone. I think he's walked one person. He is zoned in completely. And like I wrote in our weekly prospect rankings that you can find over on the Redbird Daily, he put on a little weight. He put it on the right way. He's lost some of his standing as a prospect, and he's going to get it back. If he continues to pitch like this, it doesn't matter who the Cardinals draft or who they sign from Cuba, who's 19 and a monster. He will be back up in the top five by the end of the season if he keeps on this. But it's also been kind of mixed. Sandy Alcantara had a great first start, and then last night he was miserable. His 100-mile-an-hour cheese was great, but he couldn't locate it. And when he put it over the middle of the plate, it was hit for a home run. You know, there was a lot of Jekyll and Hyde with Alcantara in his first week. Dakota Hudson had a really solid start. And then as solid as Dakota Hudson's start was, over 5 2/3 of an inning, you had Austin Gomber, who didn't get out of the first inning and let up 4 earned. It's mixed, and it might not necessarily be like the fire that we hoped it would be to start. But I would suggest that in the next week we'll definitely get to see what the small sample size projected over the rest of the season with that rotation.
Is the Texas League, and I can't remember, I know that when you get to AAA there's a lot of hitters league, but the Texas League is pretty much a hitters league, isn't it?
So the Texas League is interesting. You know, there's only six teams in the Texas League. And that means that hitters get a chance to adjust a little bit more to pitchers, especially early in the season. Like Alcantara, he pitched against the same team twice. Both of his starts were against the same team. And that's not easy to do. Sometimes pitchers try to like overextend themselves. It has the reputation of being a little bit more of a hitter's league, but you know, personally I think as the season progresses, and pitchers get the opportunity to adjust to hitters once hitters get more reps, I think that evens out a little bit. It definitely leans towards a hitter's league, but I think it's overstated how much of a hitter's league it is.
Finally, as I was looking through this, I see Jordan Hicks is your pitcher of the week at Peoria. A lot of buzz around Hicks, especially in spring training, and it looks like, looking at his early start, that was all justified.
Yeah. Some of my spies in Peoria were giving me some progress reports on how he was doing. His first start was a little bit more shaky than his second, but the day game that he pitched in yesterday, he pitched in the first part of a doubleheader yesterday. From what I understand, he had full control over all of his pitches. He only walked one guy. He struck out 5. I believe 2 of the Ks were on near 100-mile-an-hour pitches, and 2 of the strikeouts yesterday were on wipeout curves, which, I mean, that's what you want to see. You know, that's exactly what you want to see. And other than that, he was throwing strikes. And, you know, with guys that throw heat and also have a breaking pitch, what I look for more than anything is strikes. I want to see that they're throwing strikes. So, yeah, it's definitely justified. And the fact that he was substantially better control-wise in the second start, you know, as opposed to the first, like, that's a good sign, too. You get those first-game jitters out and see what kind of a pitcher they really are.
Absolutely. Makes sense. All right. Before we let you go, we have to have the weekly Luis Robert update. is there anything, any news on him this week?
There is no news. I guess the one thing that came out after we did last week's show is Ken Rosenthal has put together a little clip about Robert and some of the teams that are pursuing him. He mentioned the Cardinals and the Padres and the White Sox and the Reds and all the teams that we've talked about already. Maybe I'm reading too much into it because that's what I'm doing with Luis Robert more than anything on earth. But personally, that was the first time that a mainstream media reporter that doesn't like specialize in prospects reported on Robert. And I'm willing to bet that that means that we are coming close to him becoming a free agent. And I think if you see someone like John Heyman start tweeting about him a little bit, and John Morosi or J.P. Morosi or Paul Morosi or whatever he's going by these days, if he starts tweeting about him a little bit more or talking about him or writing about him, then I'd be willing to bet that that's right around the corner. I'll keep my ears to the ground, but I'm going to say if today is April 13th, April 14th, today's April 14th, tomorrow will be April 15th. That by the end of May, he'll have his free agency.
All right. Well, hopefully so, and we'll check in every week until that happens, just because we have to give you an outlet somewhere. So.
Yes.
All right. Kyle, thanks for joining us.
All right. Thank you, Daniel.
All right. And thanks to Kyle for hopping on briefly and letting us know about what was going on, some of the players to keep an eye out on, and of course what's going on with Luis Robert, because you know that Kyle's got to inform us about that every week. Let's take this time to get into our last segment, Swinging Away.
Tying run at second base. In the air to right center. This game is tied. Going to third is Pujols, and it's 9-9. They just won't go away.
All right, Alan, we've talked about these Twitter questions quite a bit. Let's just jump right into them and hit them on. You know, it's kind of interesting all week. We kept asking for questions and never got any, and then we put it out there today, and they just came in droves.
It was funny. I was making a cup of coffee this morning when I was walking out the door, and you sent that, and I was like, we'll see how it picks up. And my phone went off for probably the next 4 hours while I was out and about working, running around, and that's when I sent you that message. I said, hey, this may be pretty eventful, and so I think your timing was perfect on that today.
Apparently so. So, you know, of course it helps when our friend Scott, Texas Card Fan 1, just pretty much primed the pump. We've got about 6 questions from him, most of which kind of tie together. So we'll just start them one at a time, and if we don't have another new answer for it, we'll say see above. His first question is, does the Stallion need a new jockey? Of course, this is a reference to the comments that Mike Matheny has made about Randall Grichuk in the past, about him needing to be a Stallion that needs to run. We talked a little bit about that with the Matt Adams thing, but it's kind of, I don't know if it's strange, given how we've seen Mike Matheny treat other people in the past. But it's a little bit frustrating to see, not only to see him not play all the time, but when he is playing, I mean, he's batting 7th or 8th, and a guy that, you know, what, has 2 home runs, I think he's, you know, right up there. If he doesn't lead the team, he's right up there with Diaz. I think Diaz might have 3, I didn't look at it.
Yeah, Diaz has 3, yeah. And then he has 2, and I think they may even be tied in extra base hits totally.
Yeah. So, I mean, this is a guy, and again, he's always hitting behind Johnny Peralta, we've already talked about. What is the deal with Mike Matheny and Randall Grichuk? I mean, do you have any ideas?
I don't know. I mean, I figured the Grichuk just fit the role of a Matheny guy, and it doesn't make any sense. But I was thinking back after got the question today, and after he's been buried in the lineup the whole time, and I think there may be an issue of, hey, let's relieve the stress. We put him in the cleanup spot last year. It took him 3/4 of the year to finally bounce back and to start having a productive year. That being said, he still hit 20-plus home runs. Mm-hmm. But I think there may be some of that. But I don't know. this goes into one of the other questions. I just wish he'd leave the lineup alone for a week and let the guys hit in spots. And I'm on record, I've got two whole posts about the lineup, what I think it should be. And that starts from the three that we've talked about. Then we go Piscotty, Grichuk, Molina. And Molina works as another hit-and-run man behind Piscotty and Grichuk, who both are good base runners. And then you build in and go with the Jerko Peralta there, and then you go Wong, and you've got a decent lineup. We've yet to see that at all. Grichuk never moves up. He's been at the bottom the whole time, and I just wonder if he's just not that guy this year to get buried. And I don't know if Matheny even does that. It's an inadvertent thing that he does. Last year's one of those to where I felt like Wong was that guy, that they never really let him play long enough. But when Wong did play, he shot himself in the foot. Mm-hmm. This goes back to Tavares to me. If you remember, everybody wanted him to play. Because you're just like, you're not going to lose anything in the field. Craig hasn't hit. And you've got a guy that's a former, Texas League Player of the Year, who's the number two prospect in baseball. We've got to get him in the lineup. I think it started back then to where Matheny just buries guys because I think there's a trust issue with them. And I don't know how to answer that question because I feel like we beat up Matheny a lot on the show. Now I feel like it's justified. I think there's a little bit of arrogance involved where he just doesn't want to change these things. But the moving Grichuk in and out and leaving him so far in the lineup when you're really struggling to score runs, a guy that can constantly be on second base or drive runs in, still gets buried, and buried behind Peralta, who hadn't done anything. So I don't know. It just doesn't make any sense. And I think Grichuk would be a much better player playing every day make the team better playing every day.
Yeah. I got an idea on Matheny and his rotating lineups, but I'll save that when we actually get to the question.
Okay. Yeah.
I will point out, it may be just some ideas of how what Matheny thinks of this of lineups. Because remember, last year, Alamedes Diaz hit eighth for a long time. When he was hitting .400 for the month of April, he
arguably
was still
their best
eighth.
Hitter. In
right. So there may be something he thinks that eighth place is good for, and I don't know what it is, but it feels like he wants something at the bottom of the lineup, which is good, and I get that, but when you have the holes that you have in the middle of the lineup, then it kind of defeats the purpose, it feels like. All right.
Yeah, no, I can see that.
Yeah. All right, next one from Scott is updated win-loss projections. After this first couple of weeks, where are you putting their win total at?
Well, I shot high because I thought they would score a lot of runs, and I thought their starting pitching was stabilized. They haven't shown me anything yet to show. Well, they haven't done anything offensively outside of lineup makeup to convince me yet that they're not going to score a lot of runs. I went 93 in a wild card spot. I'm going to stick with that at least through the end of April. I'm going to see what we could do and see what happens. I still think that I think Fowler's close. I think I think Fowler and Karp are both really close to taking off and to making the lineup that we need to. I think we saw some glimpses of that with Piscotty as well. He didn't look very good tonight, but it looks like he's on the uptick as well. And then I still think Grichuk has a big year, and I think that Molina is going to be Molina. So I think they're going to score a lot of runs. The one thing that makes me nervous is the bullpen, but that's another thing, too, that you can fix on the fly. And Rosenthal is coming back, and Lyons is coming back. And I feel pretty good about both of them. So as of right now, I'm going to stick with my prediction, but come May 1st, it may be drastically different.
I picked about 90 wins, and I just kind of punched a little bit here on the calculator. If I'm right, they have to play at about a 580 clip the rest of the way to get there, which is about a 93 or 94 win projection if you take it over a whole team, whole year. And I don't know that they were that kind of team. So I don't know.
Yeah.
I feel like they're still got a chance, and they're going to get, hopefully they're going to run off some wins somewhere along the way. Although I don't think last year's team ever ran off more than maybe four or five.
Like I said, I think we're both in agreement that Cincinnati is going to come back down to earth.
Yeah.
And in theory, Cincinnati and Milwaukee are both rebuilding. I don't know if – I think Pittsburgh has a very good roster, but I'm not so sure if dangling your best player, and when I say best player, your heart and soul of your team, mm-hmm. in trades and moving him immediately, I'm not so sure that they didn't stick a dagger in their own back in Pittsburgh. That being said, I think there are going to be instances this year with St. Louis where they're going to run off 12 out of 15 and stuff like that and really catch fire and play well in the division and win a lot of games. So I think that it may be by attrition that they do that, but I really think that ultimately they're going to be good. But, you know, like I said, little by little, my opinion on that's waning.
I would say probably, I mean, they can get still to 90 wins, but I think they're probably looking at more like 87, 88 now, if everything goes well. And that's going to probably necessitate a pretty quick turnaround. I mean, if they're, you know, 6 and 14, you know, here in 10 days, then you really got to worry, I think.
Well, and I fully expect them to lose the series now. I hate to say it. I think Carlos probably wins tomorrow. But the Sunday night game in New York, I hate the Sunday night games. I can't stand them. I think you're always at a disadvantage on the road because you turn right back around and you're leaving. And they're going back to St. Louis, I understand. But you can't tell me at 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock New York time that you're not ready to get on that plane, and you're more worried about that plane seat than you are about how that game ends up. You know, I think you see that a lot. And especially in a situation where, especially if Martinez wins tomorrow, I would almost bet, I would put, I'm not a gambler, but I would put a lot on the Yankees for Sunday if Martinez wins tomorrow. If they're fighting off a sweep, I could see some life in them. But I halfway through the game, if the series is 1-1, I could see them wanting to get back to St. Louis really quickly. So I don't know how that factors in, but that would be their fourth series loss. You got to get back and you got to regroup in a hurry.
Yeah. I will say I read one Yankee blog today that indicated they always hated playing on Sunday night too. That they always felt like they didn't do very well. So maybe it's maybe it's one of those things everybody has.
Yeah.
Next one from Scott. And like I said, he gave us quite a few.
He just wanted to hear his name. He wanted to hear his name.
He skipped the rest of the show to come right to this part. So
yeah, I love it. We were talking about that.
Of course, Scott always is never enamored with the current regime, and so his next question is the ideal replacement for ideal replacement for next manager. I believe what he's saying is who should be the next manager. We had that question, we talked about that last week, I think. We put out the Twitter poll about who should manage, Mike Matheny or Mark McGwire. Who would you rather have? And people went with McGwire, and we talked about that because basically there's a lot of projection on a guy that hasn't ever managed. There's that guy that, looks great until you get him. I think that, I think a lot of Cardinal fans like Joe Maddon. I think a lot of Cardinal fans still probably like Joe Maddon.
Yeah.
But I will say that watching him in Chicago, I don't think what he does would fly in St. Louis very well. Well, with all the antics and the gimmicks and things of that nature. I don't know. I mean, and again, we do put a lot of blame on the manager. I don't know how much of that's justified. This team, honestly, I can't think. There's not been just a whole lot of bad bullpen decisions that I can think of in the first 2 weeks. There's just been bad bullpen results. I don't know that this team would be much better off maybe a different manager would not play Peralta, and maybe a different manager would have Richick farther up and things like that, so maybe. But I don't know how much better this team would be off with another manager. That being all said, do you have a pick that you would like to see when and if Matheny is ever let go?
Oh, man, that's tough. I don't know. I go back to the Matheny deal. Matheny was the right guy in the situation that he got whenever. In 2012, they played really well because I felt like you could sense the pressure valve was released of not having La Russa in the dugout. I thought they played really loose. But you get 3 or 4 years down the line now, and you're thinking – man, I kind of wish they had somebody like La Russa in that dugout to really make guys accountable, because I'm not so sure Matheny does that. And I don't think he wants to embarrass guys. I think that comes from him being the no-hit, you know, the defensive catcher in the lineup every day. I don't think he wants to embarrass guys. That being said, I kind of wondered if Schilt wasn't brought on to add that extra layer of maybe pressure to Matheny of, hey, we got another set of eyes down here now. You know, that's let's start improving. Let's start. You're 4 years in. We missed the playoffs. You know, it's a dang good record, but you still missed the playoffs. And 15 didn't end well for you. I thought they kind of limped into the playoffs, and I just thought the Cubs were the better team in 15 as well. And then last year happened, and now April of 17 is kind of the same thing. I don't know if I could pin anybody down. If it was a firing situation, you know, I could live with Schilt. I think Rekindo's too far gone now at this point. Mm-hmm. I know it's only been a year. I just can't see him coming back. If he didn't have the fire to come back, and there, a lot of people could say a lot of different things about why he didn't want to do it. But, you know, he's a baseball lifer, and that may have been one of those. He's like, listen, I can stay at home and instruct these young guys and make it to St. Louis two or three times a year, and that'd be about it. I just can't imagine him throwing the uniform back on and taking over the reins. So outside of that, I mean, I've got an opinion that probably scares people, but I think that the next manager of the Cardinals was signed to an extension this year, and I think it's Molina.
I don't know. I mean, there's some idea there, obviously. That being said, we've seen what catchers are worth in the past, maybe. And I got to say, I will say for this for Molina, if he's smart, and he probably is, I don't know that he would take that job. But only one, he doesn't have to. I mean, he's getting $20 million a year the next 3 years. He's not going to have to do anything he doesn't want to do. Unlike Mike Matheny, who kind of needed the money when they went after him. But yeah. Molina's got, and by the time he leaves here, especially if he finishes his career here, has a huge reputation. He's beloved. He's a guy that, to some degree, can do no wrong. When you take on that manager role, you don't get that.
It's a thankless job. You're right. I
mean, that only goes so far, and I don't know. I mean, I guess people did that with Joe Torre, although Torre's a different kind of player. I mean, he wasn't ever a lifetime Cardinal or anything like that. And they still like Joe Torre, even though he wasn't much of a manager in St. Louis. That being said, I think Yachty comes down a peg or two if he manages and isn't very good at it, or the team isn't good. It may not have anything to do with him, but if the team isn't good, or, you know, he turns out to, you know, have some different... I think he runs the risk of really tarnishing what he has, and I don't know that I would do that if it were him.
Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, I think you're probably right that... If the Cardinals did make a change, it would probably be Schilt. Might be Marmol. I know that they're very high on Marmol as well.
I was going to say that there almost feels like with Schilt and Marmol coming up, that may not be your long-term staff, whether either one of them are manager or not. That could be the staff for a long time. But, you know, not to get way off the rails here, how long do you think Matheny manages anyway? I thought about that as well, and whenever you bring up the money issues, which I kind of even hate bringing up somebody's finances, but you wonder how long he's going to want to do it. Because if you remember when he signed that first contract, it was kind of a deal of, hey, maybe a 2 or 3 year situation, see how I like it, and go from there. That's exactly kind of how I took it. So I don't know. I mean, he may make the decision. I know a lot of people don't want to hear that because they'd like the decision be made like yesterday.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, to some degree, you have this idea that Matheny's, as you kind of said, a stubborn guy that likes to double down. If he's going to do that, he's not going to let people kind of run him out of town. He's going to say, well, I'm going to be here as long as I want to be here, even longer. You know, I may be miserable, but if you're miserable too, I'm going to stick around. I don't know. I think, though, that Matheny would manage probably as long as they would let him. And the Cardinals don't, you know, they don't change managers very often. I mean, the last time that, you know, they fired Torrey, and that was, what, 95? And before that, you know, it was Herzog who resigned. I mean, you'd have to go back to, you know, whoever was there before Herzog, and I don't even know off the top of my head. I looked it up one time recently. I mean, they've only fired, like, I think two or three, maybe three managers in my lifetime. I'm 40, I'll be 42 this summer.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they don't get rid of managers easily. So, I mean, again, we've talked about this before. I think it takes Mike Matheny, you know, he missed the playoffs last year. If he finished under 500 this year, I think the seat gets hot. And a slow start next year might do it. But I can't see them. I mean, unless Mike Matheny decides he doesn't want to do it, the Cardinals are going to have Mike Matheny as opening day manager in 2018, I think. I don't think that's going to change. So, I don't, like I said, I think that if they do to replace, they would go that way. I don't know if that's ideal. I know that's what Scott asked. I mean, I don't know what's ideal. I mean, you know, Terry Francona worked in Cleveland. Would it work in St. Louis? I don't know. Like I said, Joe Maddon worked in Chicago. Would that work in St. Louis? I don't know. I think there's some people that just fit the situation, and that's when they really do well. Tony La Russa fit the situation. I mean, Tony La Russa was good everywhere, but he really fit the situation in St. Louis because there was that idea of hard work, put your nose to the grindstone, worry about the game, and that appealed to the culture that's around St. Louis, I think.
Yeah, that's it's back to the Maddon deal. The you could afford to do the things that Maddon did in Tampa Bay because no one's watching. You could afford to do it in Chicago out of desperation. You know, if it didn't work, oh well, we tried something else. But he, you know, he pulled it off. He did it there, and now he's going to be a king. In the conservative St. Louis area, I don't know if those things would play well, especially coming in after a tradition of winning. I mean, you're not coming in after the 90s. To where it was, you know, it was, you know, basically a downtime in Cardinals history. You know, that wouldn't have worked. Or, you know, may have worked in a situation there, but it wouldn't work now. You know, we are, that's the Cardinal way is that way for a reason. As ridiculous as it sounds, they're not going to want somebody coming in doing that. He would get, he'd get thrown in the backyard real fast.
Probably so. All right. Another one from Scott. How long does Mozeliak watch the circus in left field before he jettisons Matt Adams? And that's a legitimate question. I mean, that's the Mitchell Bloggs, Alan Craig, the idea. And let's
that's well put. And let's, well put. I didn't think about that.
Yeah, I mean, that's what, and that's, we'll pair this with another question from Scott that says, would Mo really jettison Adams to save Matheny from himself, or is this what we're stuck with?
I think that happens before Matheny sets him down for an extended period of time.
You know, again, we have seen John Mozeliak take the toys away one way or another, and maybe we're giving John Mozeliak too much credit, but I feel like he wasn't necessarily on board with this defensive changes. I mean, this idea that we're, you know, going to play defense and Matt Adams doesn't, you know, in the outfield doesn't support that. So, you know, could they be that Mo says, okay, you know, because he's always said, I give Mike the players and he's the one that's in charge of playing them. But he's, you know, Mo's in charge of giving the players and he could take those players away. You know, I kind of feel like that if Mo could get a deal for Adams, he probably would. And it's not, I mean, it's not going to be much now. Maybe if he had shown himself to be somewhat capable in the outfield, maybe that would have raised his value a little bit. But I do think that Mo would make that move. And I don't think he would, you know, he wouldn't come out and say it's because Mike is putting a first baseman in the outfield. But when you put that with Alan Craig and when you put that with Mitchell Boggs, I think you know, no matter what Mo says, what the actual reality is. And then you do wonder about the relationship between Mozeliak and Matheny, because Mo's always defended Matheny, even though he's admitted he doesn't always understand what's going on. He's always defending him, but, you know, if you're continually having to revamp your roster to deal with your manager, you know, there does come a point in time when you got to step back and say, is this worth it? And, you know, having to move Matt Adams, a guy that the Cardinals have brought up that could still be a valuable person, might be that situation where Mo says, you know, why am I continuing to do this?
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, you know, one of the things that I think is going to be a saving grace in that situation is, and I'm going to throw, I'm just going to throw two names out there that Adams won't bring, and it'll be Adams plus somebody, but the Cardinals fans, the ones that A, hate Matheny and A, hate Adams, are going to cheer whatever trade he brings along. Mm. But if this bullpen keeps scuffling, if you went Adams plus on a player and you went and got, say, Gregerson, or you put Adams plus on a player and you go get Neshek, that's a pretty dang good deal. Mm. You know, and maybe you could set, you sold a little bit higher than you thought you would, and where the middle relief pieces aren't sexy, it would make this bullpen look a heck of a lot better if you got two guys of that ilk, not necessarily those names.
Yeah.
But, you know, and certainly that could be done, and I think that a trade like that would be justified to where it doesn't look like he's taken away from Matheny, but it looks like he's wheeling and dealing to make the team better, which he did, but I think that we would probably believe that, hey, they're going to keep running him out here, and this is kind of a joke.
All right. I think we got a couple more from Scott. Let's, yeah, he went to town. When he gets going, he's going. When will Mozeliak go into self-preservation mode if this apparent self-inflicted chaos continues? I got to say, I don't know that Mo would have to. Mo's not going anywhere. Unless he wants to.
No.
His contract is up next year. If he wants to go somewhere else, he can. But the ownership loves him. He's done a great job. It's a chance. It's a possibility. I know that Derek Gould mentioned this on his radio show, that Mo could get the bump up to, you know, president of baseball operations or whatever kind of title that they have. And maybe Michael Gersh could come along and be the, you know, be the GM.
Which would not surprise me at all.
Yeah, I mean, that's the kind of thing a lot of people, you know, Walt Jocketty's that way over in Cincinnati. Theo Epstein's like that in Chicago. I mean, these kind of, Billy Bean out in Oakland, these kind of situations are pretty common, and I don't know how it works, you know, structurally or reporting wise or anything like that inside the organization, but it's not an unheard of thing. So yeah, you could see that. You know, so I don't think Mo has to worry about getting rid of Matheny before Matheny does enough stuff that, you know, the DeWitts want to come in and clean everybody out. Mm-hmm. I just can't see that.
And you know, one thing that I think that gets overlooked and doesn't get brought up enough, it does get brought up, but I think it gets brushed under the rug really quick. Are we all convinced that this isn't the way the Cards rebuild? That right now they're going to let it see it play out, and they're going to say, okay, now we know what we've got, now let's really go start seeing what we can get. And I'm wondering if being in wildcard contention isn't the Cards' way of rebuilding for the next big thing, you know, and to never have to go through a 90s type situation again where you miss the playoffs, you know, 5 or 6 years in a row. And that could be a Mozeliak DeWitt driven deal. So I'm not so certain. I agree with you. I don't think he's under any kind of pressure at all. And I think that we can't leave out the idea that this isn't by design a little bit. Not playing poorly, not starting off 3-7, but not being in a rush to change things, to see what you've got here, to see what you've got in Memphis, to see what you've got in Springfield, and to play your pieces to where you can get one of those big free agents in 2 years.
Yeah. It very well may be, because, you know, Mo has said he does not believe the city and the fan base would accept a full rebuild like mm-hmm. Houston did or something like that, and he's probably right, but, you know, maybe that's the way to try to, you know, transition to some of these younger, more higher-ceiling people, and then go out and get that free agent.
Mm-hmm.
All right, last one from Scott. Isn't it clear Mike Matheny would be the wrong guy to transition these young guys in the pipeline into the major leagues? There's an argument to be made there. We've seen how he does with Wong. We've seen some of that with Grichuk.
I thought we saw it with Tavares. I really did.
Yeah, we saw it with Tavares. I mean, Biscotti came through and had no problems. So it's every once in a while. But I do wonder if that, like you said, with Shildt and Marmol, you know, maybe that's part of why they brought them up too, is to ease that transition. These are guys that have been in the minor leagues, that have dealt with all these players, that have done very well with it. You know, maybe that's there to help those guys transition. But you do wonder. I think it's fair to say that if, you know, Mike Matheny is not going to be a tactical genius, and he's not going to be able to manage, you know, the players coming up, and he's not going to be able to, you know, keep everybody happy with him and on the same page, you know, why, you know, where is his value?
Yeah, that's a great point. I try to envision what the end game will be with Matheny, you know, I really don't know, because that's, you have a good point of, he's a stubborn guy and he's not going to go out under pressure. Mm-hmm. And that was kind of where I was going with the, do you see him eventually walking away, just being done with it? I don't know. You know, I really don't know. And I think that's a really good question. I mean, I don't know how much more frustration I can take of young guys coming up and not getting their run, you know? So, yeah. So I don't know if the upper crust management, if they feel the same way.
Yeah, I mean, and they get to see more than we do. They get to see more of the inside dynamics and things of that nature. But it's becoming more and more difficult for at least us as fans to understand what's going on here.
You know, Cosma's from Tulsa. Pete Cosma is. Mm. And we would see him out quite a bit. And he ran with a group of friends of ours. And I will tell you this, Cosma loved Matheny.
Yeah.
Loved him. And had a lot of high praise for him. Which makes me wonder if a lot of players do.
Well, maybe. And probably. I mean, probably do. But you also got to remember that Pete Cosma got to play a whole year at shortstop that I don't think anybody else would have ever done.
You know, that's a great point. That's a great point. I never, you know, I didn't look deep enough into it.
I mean, I Matheny's got to be very good behind the scenes because there's no other reason to have him around. I mean, really, I say that bluntly, but, you know, again, that's the whole reason that we've got him. You don't get him because he's personable, because he's terrible with the media, at least in that regard, because he's monotone and
drab.
I agree. And doesn't seem to want to engage on a lot of questions, I don't think. It feels a little bit defensive at times. You know, Tony could be that way as well, but Tony also would talk with the media and at least have some reactions to them. You know, and he's not a tactician. I mean, we know that. I think he's better than he used to be, but he's not anymore. I mean, he's not great. I mean, he's still better than, I mean, he's not bunting every third time out now. That's better. So, I mean, he's got to be, I mean, the clubhouse is the only place that he can really make a difference, and so he should be doing that. So, I don't know. Like I said, I think we're stuck with him for a while, so it doesn't make much difference.
Sure. And I don't even know if we answered the question, but yeah, I know what you mean.
Close enough. All right. So let's get to the people that aren't Scott. There are a few of them, too. Cassie, Pink Daisy 08. What are your thoughts on Rosie's return? And then Lyons was stretched out for a start. What do you think his role will be here? We touched on Rosendahl a little bit. He struck out three batters in his first game, and then he struck out the first batter in his second at start. And I don't know what the hits look like. I didn't see them.
Oh, yeah. Well, I was going to tell you, in his defense, those three singles they looked terrible. They were find a hole. They were right over the infield. They were all Texas Leaguers at best. And it was one of those that I read an article that the contact they made was under 85 miles per hour off the bat. And it was just to throw the bat out there, find a hole type situation. Kind of everything's going right for Washington at this point. So, you know, looking a little bit deeper, he did give up a run on three straight singles, but it was still a pretty successful outing, and it's tough to kind of diminish what he did in that first one, in his first outing.
Yeah, and that's good, because like I said, you know, it was one of those things I was listening or following on Twitter, and I think around that time is when I left work to come home, and, you know, all of a sudden you find out, wait, what happened? That kind of thing. So
well, I think, and just to Lions we could get into in a little bit, but I've said this all along, and I stick with it. Rosenthal will be the closer before it's all said and done. I think you're going to get moved back into an O situation in the eighth and a Cecil in the seventh. And to be honest, that's going to be pretty good. Mm-hmm. And but I've been completely wrong where the bullpen would be at this point, because I figured it would be their strength and everything would be catching up to it right now. So I may not, my opinion may be terrible.
I think Lyons is going to be, like you said, Cassie is asking what his role would be. Even though they're running him as a starter, I think that's mainly just to get innings. And he's looked very good in Memphis. But if he comes up here, he's going to be that guy. He may, you know, he'll pitch an inning or two here and there. I don't think he'll be a lefty specialist. I've never thought he was really designed for that, even though they've seen that occasionally. He's designed for the long haul. And But I don't see him displacing anybody in the starting rotation. So,
I don't either. He's an Oklahoma State guy. I've always really liked him. There have been times in the past 2 years where I honestly thought, I was like, when is Adams going to really start pushing one of these guys? Because when they were, of course, in 15 when they were, or the early part of 15 when they were loaded, that was never brought up. But there were parts toward the end of the season and a little bit last year where I thought, is there a situation where he may push for a start somewhere and maybe start pushing one of these guys? I think that time may pass with him, but I really like him, and I really think he's going to upgrade that bullpen.
Yeah, I'm thinking so. And that leads us to our next question from Bearden, who is Eric Bearden Law on Twitter, and it says, who goes down when Lyons comes up? Now, I have been on the record, I think that Jonathan Broxton gets his release, but you've got a different selection, I believe. So what are you thinking?
Well, that's, I still think that that it's going to be, and I thought that lack of performance was going to be the, and I say this with my fingers up, of he was going to have an injury, which that injury was going to be a 10-day, you know, let's reevaluate this, let's see how it is. I legitimately think he's hurt now. I think something's wrong. I think they're going to have to figure that out. I think that's going to be, at this point right now, that's going to be the low-hanging fruit to get somebody up. I think that it's going to be they're going to examine him. They're going to put him on the DL. They're going to get it figured out that way, and he could be major injured. But I will say, closely behind that, when I made that comment, I don't think there's going to be a down. I think the next one would be an out, and I think it would be the release of Broxton or the DFA to clear that spot. So I think both of us kind of hit the nail on the head on that. I'm rambling now, but yeah, I think it would be one of those, and I'm really leaning toward the Seegers factor now, because I didn't think he looked very good tonight, and he hadn't looked good at all at any point this season, including spring. And then he was really, there was a loss of trust in him last year. So I don't know. I think that's the route that they would probably go.
Yeah, it would seem to be. That's most likely, because they don't like to cut people if they don't have to. So, Tara Wellman, my Gateway to Baseball Heaven co-host, threw out, what does the newly announced personal tutor of Adams for left field mean for Grichuk, the, quote, defensive replacement who is second in hits, homers, and slugging? Now, obviously, in case you missed that, they are going to ask or have asked Willie McGee to come out and tutor Adams. You know, we've talked about Adams quite a bit, and we're going to hit this a little bit quickly, but it does make you worry, I think, a little bit that Adams is going to get out there a little bit more often, because if McGee is tutoring him, well, there's no place for him to learn those lessons except for playing in the outfield.
Yeah, it's a worrisome trend. You know, some of these things too. I think that may be to placate. You know, McGee may be coming in for a 2-week stint just to kind of sit in the dugout or hang out with the DeWitts and you know, he may be involved in something else down the line with the construction of the housing and everything at Ballpark Village Phase 2. He may have something to do with that. So this could just be one of those two. Hey, he's coming in. He's going to work with Adams a little bit. I doubt, seriously doubt, he's coming in just to work with Adams in the outfield unless they are going to go full bore into this to see what they can get out of him on the market. I can't imagine it's a situation that he's going to be the starting left fielder for long, and I just can't imagine a situation where he's going to take a lot of at bats away from Grichuk, and that would be a fireball offense if that's the case.
Yeah, I hope so. Like I said, he's played out there more than I expected, and I do worry that they're going to try to, you know, keep him out there because, you know, trying to see what he's got, but it's a dangerous risk for sure. Joe Kretz, Kretzy13 on Twitter, says, will the bullpen issues resolve themselves or will a move be made? And again, we've kind of talked a little bit about this bullpen. O's going to be better. I know you said that he might move out of the closer role, but he's still, either way, he's going to be better. You know, I still think there's good things with Slokovic and Broxton, Bowman. Broxton is a guy that we don't think will be around much longer. Cecil is a guy from what I hear that apparently takes a little while to get going every year. His Aprils are usually pretty rough. So I think, you know, again, I think we'll see Tyler Lyons come up, but I don't think Mo's going to have to make a trade or anything like that.
Even if they do, it's not going to be, I hope I'm not taking the context out of this where I think there will be a move made for the bullpen at some point this year because he does it every year, you know, to try to just add a bullpen piece just to kind of change things up. And generally it's a veteran that he brings in. So I think at some point we'll see one. But as far as improving here in the early season, I don't think it's going to be anything like that. I think you're going to look for Rosenthal to be back full speed. I think you're looking for Lyons to come back. I think that outside of that, you're pretty young, but I don't think that there will be a move made. It'll be later in the year, but I think right now they're going to build from within, and I have high hopes for the bullpen. I don't think it'll be this terrible all year, and Segrist figuring him out may be a big portion of that. But like if you say right now, I mean, even Cecil hasn't been good. I still have a lot of confidence in him. So you go from Rosenthal, O, Cecil to Sokolovich and Bowman, that's five pretty good names in a bullpen. You throw Lyons in there, and then you you know, you build around that. I think you're going to be okay.
All right. So Ben Kelly, Beefcake5, another one of the ones that gives us questions on a regular basis. Why do you think Matheny never uses the same lineup twice? Is it losing, not scoring runs, pressure from a higher up? Here's my theory on Mike Matheny, or at least in somewhat. Mike Matheny learned managing from Tony La Russa. Because he was, you know, he was involved, I think, when Tony was here. He's probably one of those veterans that Tony let have voice. My feeling is that Mike Matheny learned the mechanics from Tony La Russa. He saw what Tony La Russa was doing. He saw, because if you'll remember, Tony La Russa never did the same lineup twice either. I mean, he had like, well, I think there was one year that he had like 150-something lineups in 162 games. Tony La Russa did that because Tony La Russa was always looking for that edge. He always wanted to put in that player that had seen that pitcher before, or, you know, there was that fine, you know, 1% chance that this guy would be better, but he was going to play those odds. And he knew what he was doing. I mean, he had the stuff to back it up. He knew the gut. He had been a manager for, you know, 30-something years anyway. He knew what he was doing. And my feeling is that Mike Matheny saw what Tony La Russa did and said, I can do that too. That's what a manager looks like. That's what a manager does. Manager changes lineups. A manager looks for the hot hand. Manager does this and that. And he doesn't have the experience, and he doesn't have the knowledge of managing, because obviously Mike Matheny's played the game. He knows baseball. I'm not arguing that, although maybe I should at times. But I don't think he really, really grasped why Tony La Russa was doing what he was doing. He just is doing it because Tony did it. I mean, does that make sense? I mean, do you understand what I'm saying?
No, yeah, I agree. I mean, and it's funny because I was going to go, that's a great point. Because what I was going to say is, I think Matheny overthinks some of those slots. Mm-hmm. And I ultimately, it doesn't, this year, the past few years, trying to find that hot button to push to run it for a little while, I think that I just don't think he did it very well. This year, I really thought there was going to be a little more stability in the lineup, and I thought it was going to be different. And we've already talked about that, some of the components where I thought would be in those places. Now you get into that situation where you get off to the poor start. Now you're kind of pushing buttons a little bit. And I actually didn't mind the lineup tonight. I think you need to have Grichuk higher. Like, I want Grichuk to hit fifth for at least 3 weeks to a month to see what you can do, see what kind of damage you can do. I don't think that's going to happen. But I could live with how they had it tonight. I don't think he should ever hit behind Peralta, but it was beneficial at 2 points of the game. So, but yeah, I do. I agree with your theory, and I just don't. I think he tries to do it that way, but I just don't think he does it well.
All right, last two questions. Well, last two baseball questions, both of which come from Ben Adams, which is the Peavine on Twitter. His first one is, when do they move Carpenter to third and put Adams at first? Also, why no Martinez in left field? We've kind of talked about that, and that's not, for whatever reason, they have put Matt Carpenter's feet in cement blocks and buried them around first base. He's not going anywhere. I just don't.
I've got a theory. Okay. And I've been waiting on this one, so go ahead.
No, go ahead. I don't want to hear that.
Okay. Are we at a situation to where we need to start looking at the deal to where Carpenter's not the golden boy we think he is? And I don't want to say that in a negative way, but you know what I wanted out of Carpenter? And it sounded like he was wanting to do that, and I think he would be lethal in this spot. I was hoping they were going to make a Zobrist-type player out of him, to where his bat was in the lineup every day, but he may play a different position every day. I was kind of hoping that would be the situation. I think he went to them and said, hey, I signed the contract. I signed early. I want one position, and I don't want to move. And if you're going to go find another leadoff hitter and I'm going to hit third, then I'm going to play first every day. I want the glove. I've moved position for you in the past. This is going to be about me and what I want to do. Because there is no talk at all about him moving. And I just wonder if it's not a Carpenter thing more than it is a ball club situation.
It could be. I'm not saying that it's not. I mean, we do tend to, what's the word I want to look for? We do tend to maybe make our players a little bit nicer than they are, a little bit more team-focused than they could be. And some of that's just the way they portray themselves in the media. Some of that's just our natural inclination to believe the best of them. It could be that. I don't know. Like I said, I just feel like there was some, and again, it just didn't make a lot of sense for the Cardinals to come out and say, even if they told Carpenter that he was going to play first base, it didn't make a lot of sense for them to come out so early and say that. It just, I don't know, but it may be that way. But also, Matt Carpenter's under contract. There's not much he can do if they decide to move him back over to third, you know.
Well, yeah, and it just doesn't make any sense. I mean, you're playing a guy who, you know, he was drafted as an overweight catcher. He hit his way enough to where you can move him to first base. Isn't that probably the position? I mean, I don't know. It should stop right there to me. You know, mm-hmm. I understand he lost all that weight, but you're putting him out of position. He looks really awkward, and he hasn't had the season that Chris Duncan had. He's not Schwarber. Yeah. You know, he doesn't. I like Adams, yeah, but he's not that kind of bat to where you find an uncomfortable spot defensively for him to play, to be in the lineup, to where you could move like I said earlier, is arguably the weak link in Peralta, and put Carpenter there, Grichuk in left, Adams at first. You're better defensively, and you're much better offensively. I don't get it. It just doesn't make any sense to me, and I would love to hear Matheny reasoning on it.
Yeah. As for why Jose Martinez hasn't seen more time, I don't know. I honestly don't. And again, like you said, I was not on the Martinez bandwagon. And it really, I mean, you could have kept Tommy Pham for just as, I mean, because if you're not going to play somebody, you might as well not play Pham because he's used to it. I don't know. I don't understand why they're not, because the guy hit in spring training, and but they seem to be content. It's almost like they're like, well, we can't play him. We got to have a defense. We got to have a big bat at the end of the game. Well, you know, if you didn't have Matt Adams out in the outfield, you'd have a big bat at the end of the game.
So, yeah, Martinez has done nothing but hit. Yeah. You know, since it, all year, it's stupid.
Yeah. Last question from Ben is, when will offensive output start to pick up? You know, don't know. Got to be soon. But you look at next week. You got the Pirates who. I feel like I haven't looked at their numbers, but I think that starting rotation should be hittable. Then you get the Brewers, who the Cardinals have played well for a while, and then you've got the Blue Jays and the Reds. I mean, after this weekend in New York, and most of those games that we're talking about are at home. You've got pretty much everything you need for an offense to start to click. The weather's going to start warming up a little bit more.
I was going to put a lot of emphasis on that too. The offenses usually start clicking when it gets above 75, 80 degrees. I think that's going to be a big factor.
Yeah. So it should be soon. Hopefully so. All right. We have tackled all but one of the questions. We are running a little long, but I want to go ahead and tackle Kyle Reese's from question. I will warn you, like we did last week, if you want to turn it off now, we have done with the baseball talk. You can turn us off now. Go rate and review us over at iTunes. We would appreciate that because we need the ratings. Hopefully they're good ones, but we'll take whatever. You can just leave stars, or you could actually write a review and tell us what you think of the show, and that'll help other people find it, which would be great. And again, follow us on Twitter, all that kind of stuff. But we're going to do a little bit. I know we've run about an hour and a half here now anyway, and it's getting late. But we're going to go ahead and talk a little Star Wars here at the end. And Kyle's question is, did you guys get a little emotional watching the 40th anniversary panel? And then also when the trailer comes out in the next 3 hours, which Kyle wrote that obviously before the Last Jedi trailer came out today. Star Wars Celebration going on in Orlando. Big day yesterday with the 40th anniversary panel. Today, the Last Jedi panel. Tomorrow, they're talking Rebels. A few little other things have kind of come out related to comic books, related to cartoons. Alan, I don't know if you had a chance to watch the 40th anniversary panel yesterday.
Yeah.
I don't know that I got emotional watching it. But it was kind of cool to see, you know, all those people, you know, come back and spend some time. And it was really, really interesting to see that, you know, they had George Lucas come out and do that.
Exactly. That's what I was going to say. I was glad that they brought back George to do it. And, because I'd always heard that he was 50-50 on what direction he went and that he didn't like The Force Awakens and stuff like that. But that's one thing I can give Star Wars fans. Super dedicated, and the Star Wars universe, the creators do it well. Yeah. It's bringing guys back, and there's a lot of love in that situation.
Yeah, I mean, you know, for the most, you know, everybody likes to give some grief to Lucas, especially about the prequels and things of that nature. But you know, there was nothing but a warm reception for him, and. To hear him tell us some of the stories, to have people like Hayden Christensen, who hadn't been at, you know, a lot of these, you don't see him in a lot of this stuff. You got to see Harrison Ford, who came. Mark Hamill, of course, was there. A very moving tribute to Carrie Fisher at the end of it, and then to end the whole panel with John Williams directing the orchestra, you know, had Leia's theme versus the Star Wars theme and the Imperial March and all that kind of cool stuff. It was pretty cool. I guess the only disappointment I had, as we talked about it last week, I was hoping they were going to announce that the movies were coming back this summer. in the theater. At least A New Hope would come out at some point in time. They did not announce anything like that. That seemed to be the spot they were, if they were going to do that. That would have been cool, but I guess I can understand them, you know, not wanting to, you know, try to mess with the movie schedules and not going up against some of their Marvel stuff as well. Disney would not want that.
Right.
I get it. It just would have been a lot of fun if they had.
Mm-hmm. It would have been awesome.
And the trailer comes out today. I got to say, I was kind of keeping an eye on that panel. A little bit, and I was watching it. It was cool to see all those people coming out and talking and all that. And honestly, I got to the end of it. I really wasn't sure they were going to put a trailer.
Whenever I sent you that message, I hadn't seen it yet. I mean, that was whenever I sent. I go, hey, they are going to release this today. When you and I were talking about the music, and no more did I send that to you than my Twitter notification popped up from Star Wars that, you know, the first trailer, and I was like, okay, that's when I said, now I'm watching it.
So. Yeah, because, I mean, they get it, and the director's up there, and they're talking, and they say, well, we've got, you know, and they say, do you have anything for the fans today? And I said, well, we've got a teaser poster, which is a beautiful poster. But, you know, like the whole crowd went, oh, you know, like, wait a minute, that's not what we were expecting. And then, you know, they talk about the poster and stuff like that. It was like, very, very cool. And then they kind of stand around a little bit, and they say, well, you got anything else? And he's like, well... yes, of course we've got a trailer, you know, and then everybody, of course, goes nuts. But it was an interesting look at this. I think the next movie is there's going to be probably some hints of Empire. It's not going to be as much of a repeat, if you will, as Force Awakens was of A New Hope.
Yeah.
I mean, you're really going to get into the mythology and philosophy of the Jedi, it feels like. And trying to figure out exactly what they should be and what they can be.
Well, and I had read read an article, which you could probably enlighten us on a little bit more, to where the last line, of course, which got everybody thinking, uh-oh, what's that mean? If this is a situation where the dark side and the light side is now going to become a rebels-type gray area. To where it's not necessarily going to be as cut and dry as it has in the past. And that kind of makes me wonder. My brother asked me something before Force Awakens that kind of disturbed me. What if Luke's the bad guy in one of these? And I go, I don't know if that could happen, but that could be the twist that, you know, that's no one knew that they were related in Empire Strikes Back either.
There was that idea that Luke might be the villain of 7 of Force Awakens when it was out, and I don't think they would do that. Again, I think they're built up enough, and I think...
Yeah, this isn't WWE.
You're right. This is, you know, not only that, I mean, it'd be one thing if you knew you were going to have another 10 movies with Luke Skywalker, and you could make him evil for a while, then bring him back and all that stuff, but you've got 2 movies with Mark Hamill. I mean, that's it, you know. Assuming that Luke survives, even if he survives both of them, you're not going to have him be more than, you know, if they did another trilogy, he might pop up as a little cameo, but that's about it. I mean, this, if you're going to explore anything with Luke, you're going to do it now, and so to waste that time and make
sure
people... Now, again, is he going to have a crisis of conscience? Is he going to have this idea that the Jedi have caused more trouble? You know, I don't know. It could be. But I think there's some really interesting things in the trailer, besides the fact that there's some new ships, new planets, which you always get to see. I don't know. I think it'll be fun. It's going to be tough. Wait till December for sure to watch that. But and it'll be, I'm sure that trailer will be on attached to Guardians of the Galaxy here in a couple of weeks. So it'll be kind of fun to go to a big seat on a big screen and such. But
it can open up a lot more. It was funny because when I sent you that message about the helmet, I thought, you know what? Would his helmet still be around, or was that possibly the Vader mask that we saw that was destroyed? But that would have been blown up as well if Kylo Ren's mask was blown up as well on the Starkiller planet. You know, so I don't, you know, that was my deal. But whenever I saw it in a little bit better lighting, you could tell it was his mask. So, you know, I'm really ready to see how it all ties in.
Yeah, that does seem to be the way it goes. There were some people that talked about that being Vader because of the glass around it and all that. But it was pretty, I thought it was pretty obvious that it was his mask. And, did he pick it up as he left? Did he have more than one?
Sure.
You know, who knows? I mean, there's lots of things we don't know about how that, you know, Captain Phasma's going to be in this next movie. We don't necessarily know how she gets off the Starkiller base just yet. Although,
sure.
I did see that there was an announcement that this summer, right before Force Awakens, I had a number of comics that kind of told a little bit, led up to it. And they're going to do the same thing this year, Journey to the Last Jedi. And one of them is a four-parter on Captain Phasma and telling how she escaped and things of that nature. So, I get it again. I know there's some people complain about, well, I just want to watch the movies. I shouldn't have to read comic books and books and things like that. And you don't. I mean, it doesn't. If you don't care how Phasma got there or if it's that important, they'll reference it. But I think the extra stuff is kind of, it's kind of deepens it if you really want to get into it.
Yeah, well, and it's, I mean, in one of those things, it even goes to the art factor of it to me, of the clever writing and that kind of stuff and storytelling is amazing to me. It may not be everybody's cup of tea, but it's amazing to me that people can think about that and plot a storyline that detailed. You know, that's part of the reason I enjoy them.
Yep. All righty. Well, again, we'll wrap this for this week. We'll come at it again next week, and maybe we'll cut it shorter next week. We keep extending these things out.
We're going to have a week when they play well, when we won't have anything to talk
about.
Yeah,
we'll just say, yep, good stuff.
That's going to happen.
Keep it going. But until then, for Alan and I'm Daniel. We'll talk to you later.
All right. Good night.
McCarver, the first one. Now his infielders all over him. A new world's record of 17 strikeouts in one game.
Suter from the belt to the plate. A swing and a miss. And that's a winner. That's a winner. A World Series winner for the Cardinals.